This podcast is brought to you by MyScore IQ. MyScore IQ services are here to help you be prepared when it comes to making big financial decisions, such as buying or refinancing your home or purchasing that new car. Try it out for only $1 for a 7-day trial. You'll receive your FICO scores from all three major credit bureaus, along with active credit report monitoring and alerts for changes to your credit report and possible suspicious activity.
MyScore IQ services can help you be in the best position possible when you take that step to apply for a home or auto loan, all for $1 for a 7-day trial. Visit MyScoreIQ.com/Todd to learn more. That's MyScoreIQ.com/Todd.
Welcome back to another episode of the Talking Stocks podcast. Joe with Todd Campbell here as always. Todd, how are you?
Joe, I am doing well, and I see you survived your first time. So tell the listeners what you did today, because I think it's awesome.
Yeah. I went and had my first surf lesson, which was an experience. The water is here in New Hampshire is still in the mid 50s, so had to yank a wetsuit on myself, and got out there, stood up a few times, and we'll go from there. I've got a few more in the works in the future, and so it's a nice little hobby for those who are lucky enough to live where we do.
Glad to see that you survived it and you're back in time for us to talk some stocks.
Yeah, absolutely. I am sure happy to be here. So we wanted to kick off this week. We're gonna do another earnings read through, and so I'm just getting it pulled up here. So we wanted to talk about Nvidia at pretty good length here. Screen share is not cooperating.
Anybody who has been, I can share, Joe, if you want me to.
Yeah, that would be helpful. I'm having some sort of computer setting thing.
Sure. No problem.
Sweet. Thank you.
So let's see here. Let's go to Nvidia's website. We'll start off that way. And this is a stock that, like, listeners, anybody who's been listening to us for a while, we've talked about it a couple different times. And, mostly because, like, if I pull up the chart, and again, we have these on YouTube, everybody. If you subscribe, thank you so much. We do appreciate you coming back every week. I appreciate you smashing the like button so that the Google overlords will reward us with their algorithm. And, if you haven't subscribed your first time here, welcome. Feel free to subscribe. We are always talking stuff. We love to talk stocks. But you notice that I just brought the chart here, Nvidia. And I think, Joe, we were talking about it originally back here January or December as it was making this huge, big base and trying to come out of this base. It kind of like it tried to, and then it failed. It rolled back towards the bottom, and then it broke out again, and it pulled back. And a 200-day moving average done a nice job of holding that 200-day moving average the whole way up. We now have these two saucers coming up again. And then we just reported earnings, which we're going to talk about right now, which is threatening to bust it out to all-time highs, up about 5% today, Joe. So I thought this would be a really good one for us to go through. I do own this one personally, so full disclosure for everybody, so that, I am talking my book a little bit here. But I've owned it for a long time. I'm up about 500%.
Is that all?
Yeah, on Nvidia. the lesson there, Joe, is that it's never too late, right? I mean, oftentimes we'll find stocks, people talking about it and say, I can't take it now. It's moved too much, Has it really? There's no time like the present, So anyways, we're on Nvidia's website here, Joe, and you can see that, this pulls up here, and I thought it might be useful just to give people a little background in case they're new to the Nvidia story. Transformational power of accelerated computing from gaming to enterprise data center. So really, and I think, Joe, you talked about building a computer a few months ago when we were talking about Nvidia, and you had said that the graphic card prices had just gone up substantially.
Yeah. We mentioned that in our chip shortage episode as well. And so when you're going to build your own computer, at least for gaming, generally the most expensive component, except for maybe the the monitor, if you consider that a component, is the graphics card, which essentially keeps your games running and makes them look as pretty and as possible and keeps them as high functioning as they possibly can be. And so the graphics card alone is, it's not a card. It's not like a little computer chip or something. It's like this big thing and it's got fans attached to it. And they can cost anywhere from $200 up to well over $1,000, but will generally run you $300 to $500 for a good one.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of reports earlier and they were talking about the chip shortage episode. Just go back into our history, folks, and you can pick up that episode. That was a really cool episode. But you know, they were talking about how, you know, the demand with for, because of Bitcoin mining for NVIDIA chips was so high that they actually had to spin off a different type of chip so that people would stop buying the chips used for the graphic for the computing consoles and everything. So yeah, so they're making the GPUs that are used in, you know, high performance gaming computers and consoles. And you can see that they've got a lot of, you know, marketing materials to that. Then of course, you know, they're also, you know, this big data center business, you know, that's, I think it's called DPUs. Yeah, you get the GPUs and then the data center and edge. And edge is a huge thing right now. And again, you know, being able to get information to users regardless of where they are with, you know, as little latency as possible. And a lot of this information now, right, Joe, is all video. I mean, look at us, right? We're doing a podcast, but we're also recording this and putting them up on YouTube. So there's a lot of video and everything. And all of that obviously is pretty taxing on the system. So I'm just going to go to the investors relations part here, and you can see the stock is up today. GPUs.
Yeah, that's a GPU right there. And for those who haven't seen one before,
two fans right there.
Yeah, two fans. Keep it's it cool. It's about the size of like maybe one of those like big Samsung Galaxy Note phones, if you've ever seen those. Big, or like I've got like, they might be like the size of this notebook.
Gotcha. One of the things here jumps out at me, May 21st, you know, they reported they're going to try and split their stock 4-for-1. So just as a reminder to everybody, because this always comes up when people talk about stock splits, it doesn't really change anything. Okay. A $600 stock, if you do a 4-to-1, is now going to trade at 150, right? It does nothing to the market cap. The size of the company is the same. There is the argument, though, that by splitting a price of a high price stock, by splitting stock of a high price, you know what I mean, that it reduces the cost and then maybe opens it up to more individual investors who otherwise couldn't afford to buy it.
And that's generally why they do it, right?
Yeah. But again,
are there any other reasons that companies split their stock? Really?
No, I feel like it's marketing.
Yeah.
Because think about it. You can do fractional share buys now on most platforms let you do that.
Yep.
I mean, I suppose it's possible if you only have like an account with $1,000 in it, right? You know, then maybe.
Yeah, maybe. That I do honestly, like I find myself in that position sometimes just because I don't have a lot of money to throw around. And so like, as I've said for the past several weeks now, my cash position is very low. And so I don't have a lot to throw around, but at the same time, I don't really like buying portions of shares. I don't know. There's just something about it that I don't like. I'd rather own a whole number rather than 0.5 or 1.25. And so for me, when I look at a stock like Nvidia that's at $650, I would have to free up a decent amount of cash in order to just buy one share. And so I have not purchased any as of yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that case, then it does, I can see where that would make sense. And maybe it does open it up to more investors. The other point that I was just going to make is that, you know, it's not like it changes your percent return, right? You know, I mean,
right.
10% return on $600 stock doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's a,
yeah.
10% return is a 10% return. So,
yeah. And I also don't like having teeny tiny positions and stuff. Like I don't have, what is my smallest position here? It's my smallest position is probably still like 3%.
Yeah. Okay. So you and I are very different on that. But again, we're different. We've talked about this on the show in past episodes. You and I are at very different points. You know, I've got family, kids, house, more obligations, and I'm not retiring soon, but I mean, much closer.
It's on the horizon for you, whereas my road is I'm really just at the beginning of my road. So, yeah, so I'm very different positions.
I'm much less interested in running a concentrated portfolio than you might be. But anyways, let's dive in here, Joe. And so, you know, again, we're talking about gaming demand, potentially cryptocurrency demand. I'd be looking for information on the data center. You know, again, how are we delivering businesses, delivering information to their end users, be it employees or consumers? So you see right at the top here, record revenue of $5.6 billion, up 84% year over year.
Now, impressive.
Yeah. And think about how big this company is. This company has a market cap of
several hundred billion, right?
$400 billion.
Wow.
This is a $400 billion company. And it just grew its revenue 84% year over year. That's not easy to do.
No.
When you get to a certain size, it's not, because a lot of big numbers, right? It's much easier to double your sales when you're doing 100 million in sales than it is when you're doing billions. Record gaming revenue. So 2.76, or a little bit less than half, comes from gaming. And that more than doubled.
That totally makes sense to me.
Now, I don't know the answer to this question. And I don't, somebody can mention in the comments, or Joe, maybe you know off the top of your head, but do you know, does the NVIDIA power the PlayStation or the Xbox? Do we know? Or is this all coming from PC gamers?
I think that's all PCs. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, in the comments, if anybody happens to know, that would be interesting. And then, of course, data center revenue, the lion's share of the remainder, you know, still $1 billion left over after this, but $2 billion in sales for data center revenue, up 79% year over year. So I don't think there's anything bad there. And then they do give you a quarter over quarter. They say that the top line, so again, that $5.7 billion in revenue, grew 13% sequentially. So in the quarter, they did 13% more.
And that's pretty good, but that's not amazing with having the perspective of those other games.
Yeah, but still, I mean, if you can post double-digit quarter-over-quarter growth.
Oh, yeah.
For a company this big, that's good. Okay, so GAAP earnings per share was $3.03.
Also up 106%.
See, and you know, the thing that always jumps out to me, and then look at this, Joe.
Wow.
Up 31% from the prior quarter.
Yeah, that's okay.
So what we just talked about, right? 84% on the top line, but that translated into 106% growth in the bottom line.
We like to see that, don't we?
And then sequentially, 13% revenue growth that translated to 31% or bottom line growth.
That's really good.
So, and again, that shows you operating leverage, right? That's why, you know, in the class, the How to Talk Stocks class that I do, I often will mention, hey, keep track of what's happening with operating margin. Because if operating margin is growing, it's showing that they have leverage. So as their sales grow, the profitability grows and they're able to leverage that. And you're seeing that here, I think.
Definitely.
And then the non-GAAP numbers are similar. 103% year over year, 18% prior quarter. So the non-GAAP usually backs out one-time events, or what are considered to be one-time events, like, you know, shareholder compensation, that type of thing. Strong demand for products driving revenue, no clue. data center business continues to expand. AI to process computer vision, conversational AI, that's interesting. Natural language understanding. So a lot of these maybe more complex systems that are taking what we say to them in doing stuff with what we're saying to them, maybe are using its systems. gaming and design markets, large average of our laptops, computing platforms is accelerating. They talk about how they are now 1 year in on their acquisition of Mellanox, which improved their, how deeply they dive into data center. And they're trying to acquire ARM Holdings, which is an think of it, them as the architect for chip design. And that's a huge potential coup. And many people question whether or not that deal is actually going to pass muster with regulators. So I think there has been a headwind to NVIDIA's stock because of that. If there were any potentially good news to come from it, then I think that that would help NVIDIA's shares head higher. So investors, listeners, probably want to just every once in a while Google ARM Holdings NVIDIA and see whether or not there's any movement on that merger. Gaming, cloud computing, AI, robotics, self-driving cars, genomics, and computational biology, NVIDIA continues to do impactful work and invent a better future. I mean, those are about the buzzwordiest buzzwords you can get.
Yeah, they're all over the map.
And that's
which is good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, these are all multi-billion dollar market opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
They do pay a dividend.
Very generous 16 cent dividend.
Yeah. So what's that? that works out to a 0.1% yield.
Oh, they're so nice.
So you're definitely, and that's fine. This is a growth company, obviously.
Yeah, they won't be showing up on our best dividend stocks list.
No, the best dividends report will not include NVIDIA. That report that we put out for members, free trial below, that includes stocks that score high in our research that have four dividend yields of greater than 1.5%. So they would need to substantially increase their dividend to make that cut. So, I mean, it just gives you, again, you know, the quarterly progression, the year-over-year growth, 84%, revenue of $5.7 billion. Gross margin was 64.1%.
That's down from last year a little bit.
Down a percent from last year, up a percent from last quarter.
Huh.
I guess I'll call that kind of a wash, but something that we should keep track of. It could be that some of their...
Yeah, I mean, for those listening, we're talking about a difference of between 65 and 64%. So it's not like they're... like they're close to being unprofitable. They're doing just fine.
Yeah.
But that could be a minor growing pain.
Right. And if you look at, this is what we were talking about with that financial leverage, operating expenses only grew 63% while revenue grew 84%. So that, again, that's why your operating income, net income, and diluted earnings per share all more than doubled. And then they just do the non-GAAP numbers, which are pretty similar. And then their outlook for the second quarter, revenue is expected to be $6.3 billion. So if I flip back here to my NVIDIA chart that shows me 1 year ago's quarter. So the quarter that they're projecting $6.3 billion in, they reported $3.9 billion last year.
So
they're going to go from 3.9 to 6.3.
I should have my calculator out right now.
So it's not, obviously it's not 100% because that would be 7.8.
Exactly.
It's still going to be healthy growth, but it's going to be a deceleration. It's going to be a deceleration from what
we saw. That's about 62%.
So 62%, which still, Joe, going back to that chart where I can see those, that would still put it pretty high relative. I mean, if you look at the three quarters prior to this quarter they just reported, growth was 61%, 57%, and 50%. So still forecasting pretty strong growth there. I'll call that good. And the other thing is too, Joe, right? I mean, we want companies to under-promise and over-deliver.
Right.
That's a key piece of metric for our scoring system is the number of beats over the last four quarters. We incorporate that into the score. So we like management teams that understand, okay, you have to sandbag a little bit, right? You have to, you know, keep some downward pressure on people's optimism and then report better than what they were expecting. And historically, you'll get rewarded for that in a higher share price.
They beat on this earnings report, right? I know we haven't quite gotten there. We usually pull up another tab with Seeking Alpha, but
yeah, let's do that now.
Why not?
And just see how that matches up.
I'm guessing they beat just because of the way the price reacted today.
Yeah, yes. By 200 million.
Oh yeah. Oh,
that's pretty good. Versus the estimate. So there's 250 million more in revenue than Street was expecting. And then the earnings, that's a big beat.
That is
a gap by 40 cents and gap by 51 cents. So that's a, yeah. And then you can actually see here too, that they have the revenue expected to be 6.3 billion plus or minus two versus 5.5 the prior year. Gross margin 64.6 to 66.5. And actually, that's what we were just worrying about was the gross margins. So I guess we shouldn't worry, Joe.
No.
Because, you know, yeah, they fell 100 basis points year over year last quarter to 64.1. But their guidance is actually saying, yeah, no, we're going to do better. It's going to run 64.6 to 66.5.
Yeah, the margin doesn't concern me. What does kind of concern me as somebody who doesn't have a position but might want to open one is the deceleration. It's a silly thing to say, but the deceleration in revenue growth. Like, I feel like now is probably their peak growth for at least a little while, because as we just did the math, like they would have to smash next quarter out of the park for it to be anywhere near what it was this quarter.
Yeah. Right? The other thing, comment, that's a great point too. And we talked about this when we started talking about semiconductor stocks last fall. And we actually talked it again when we started saying, hey, maybe, you know, tap the brakes a little bit on semiconductors now. And this was about a month ago, 6 weeks ago. There is a certain amount of seasonality associated to when orders come in and when they get filled. And typically the summer months are a weaker period for semiconductors based on the book-to-bill ratio, which is, again, the ratio of the orders to how many are being fulfilled. So it could very well be, we'd have to look at that, Joe. It could be that this is a seasonally weaker quarter anyways. So, and then it would reaccelerate as you get into the fall again. Nothing here in this report that makes me not want to own the stock, that's for sure.
Yeah, agreed.
Broad wave of laptops powered by NVIDIA's second generation RTX graphics and launch of the GeForce RTX. It's a mouthful. Starting at $1,000. Yeah, these are not cheap.
Yeah. They get a lot more expensive than that too, believe me.
Really? $800 for gamers and creators?
I wonder if those prices are inflated already because of the chip shortage. I don't know how that works, like when it's directly from the manufacturer, because most of the stuff that you're going to buy on the open market is going to be from Amazon or Best Buy or Walmart or something like that. You're not going to get it directly from NVIDIA or directly from AMD most of the time. So I wonder if that's like that's their price that they're setting, and yeah, we're gonna still make money off of this despite the chip shortage, or if that's like in a perfect world where there wasn't this shortage, we would be charging that much.
I imagine there's some amount of increase that gets passed on to the wholesaler and then the distributor.
Yeah, people are surprisingly willing to spend that kind of money too if they know they're getting a really good product. Like, it's my build last summer cost all in just about $1,000 with accessories and everything, not including a monitor. But I mean, you can look up pre-built ones that are 4,000 or more easily. Wow. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of willingness to spend that much, especially with the continuing rise of esports.
Yeah, see here they're talking about the data processing units, those DPUs. They're talking about the data center, just to strengthen the data center and different things that they're rolling out, new chips. Apparently this makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, so if we're looking at AI stocks and we're thinking that artificial intelligence is going to improve processes for a lot of different businesses, clearly that's going to require a lot of compute power, right? So, it seems like NVIDIA's got a really good opportunity there. And just looking through here, I don't know if there's anything else here that you see that would be.
I don't know what happened. All right, and then here we go. Quite honestly.
Yeah, and then if this is where the rest of the other billion in revenue that was missing comes in. Professional visualization, $372 million in first quarter sales, up 21%. So that's for real-time 3D design and collaboration. And it looks like they sell to industrial products companies, BMW, et cetera.
Yeah, so companies that are probably doing like 3D modeling for components, that would be my guess.
Yep, okay, that makes sense. And then an automotive, which is, one big reason a lot of people say, okay, geez, think about the electrification of automobiles and how many more chips are in those automobiles. And as we get, autos are more and more sophisticated, they're doing things like self-driving, right?
Right.
Just think about how you're going to have to digest all of that information very quickly, with no latency, that is coming from the sensors and the cameras and stuff on the outside of the vehicle, and make decisions in microseconds based on that information. So I think a lot of people have thought that could be a very big future driver. All right, that's a future driver for the company.
No pun intended.
Yeah, right, driver. And, if you look at the automotive sector, that's obviously not doing much for them right now. Down 1% year over year, $154 million in revenue. Makes me wonder, too, whether or not some of the shutdowns and then, the difficulty in production of these autos is probably weighing on it a little bit.
Definitely wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it doesn't really matter, though. That's a sliver of their overall pie, if you will.
Yeah. So, what do you think, Joe, overall there? Was there anything that jumps out at you, or what's your takeaway?
I think I was pretty blown away by those first few lines. And then as we got a little bit further down, I think the excitement wore off a little bit. I do almost feel like I may have missed the boat on this stock, which is fine. It's not like there's any shortage of good ideas out there. But I think I would really want to see like what their Q2 looks like and kind of reassess from there. I'm not sure how long they can continue growing at this rate, considering how big they are already.
Yeah. I think that, I'm glad I own it. I'm not selling it. It's part of my forever portfolio. I think just looking at, the chart we looked at before, I like it. I think that if it trades down, I would be a buyer. I'd be looking for down 3 to 5% day. Usually volatility will give us that on, even on a big growth stock like this. And so I would be approaching it and looking at it and saying, okay, I get myself down 3 to 5% day, I'm going to take some. So if you like the stock, I'd be looking for an entry. There's nothing in that earnings report that scares me off.
Me neither. All right. So let's talk about a big acquisition from the past week that probably most of our viewers and listeners have heard about. But if you haven't, Amazon is buying MGM for over $8 billion. This is a pretty big acquisition. I believe this is Amazon's second biggest acquisition ever after Whole Foods. And it's so obviously there's the impact that's going to have on Amazon for their for their streaming services, but also it's gotten the rumor mill kind of churning over the past few days about who's next. And a lot of people are saying that Viacom CBS is next in the next up for acquisition, that is. So we'll talk about the acquisition first and then kind of get to some of the rumors that are going around. So Todd, what do you make of this acquisition? I was frankly pretty surprised by this. I didn't really see it coming. It makes sense. I mean, obviously Amazon being the second biggest company in the world or third biggest company in the world, they have the money to spare, and it'll certainly help them in the long run. But there's a lot of industry consolidation going on right now, which is concerning.
Yeah, it's a golden age for content creators. It really is. You know, I mean, if you've got content, if you can produce content, you're being rewarded for it. And you're being rewarded for it at a level that is greater than what experts would say that content is worth. Because if you do the reading and the backstory on it, and you know, when the rumors were floating around that Amazon might be could be a buyer of it, of those assets, a few different sources had said, yeah, maybe $6 billion, $6.5 billion was being tossed around. This is obviously a lot more than that. And, you know, Dan Klein, who's a great friend, and he's over at Seven Investing. You can follow him at Worst Ideas on Twitter. And he was laughing about it because he was talking about how, you know, they're paying all that money for the Pink Panther franchise that most people know from insulation than from actual TV shows. And he has a point. If you look at their catalog, the catalog is, you know, I mean, it's not a home run catalog, but it's a solid catalog. But they're certainly paying a lot for a solid catalog. I mean, they obviously have some Bond movies and stuff, but I mean, they're not, that whole franchise, the Bond franchise, is wicked complex. There's all sorts of rights owned by different people and stuff. And so I don't know necessarily what they're getting of that. I suppose, Joe, that one of the reasons they're willing to pay so much is because they're looking at how much they have to spend to license it, and that's why.
I suppose. I can't find like a full list of all of their content, but the movies that they list in the press release are not movie franchises, with the exception of James Bond. It's not like they've got Star Wars or the Marvel movies or something like that. They're good popular movies. 12 Angry Men, Legally Blonde, Raging Bull, RoboCop, Rocky, Silence of the Lambs. I mean, you know, big movies, but they're one-off movies. They don't have tons of sequels, and if they do, they're not very good. And so they have over 4,000 movies, they say. 17,000 TV shows. I'm sure that's 17,000 individual episodes. And they list three TV show titles: The Handmaid's Tale, Fargo, and Vikings. And sorry if this triggers anyone who's listening, but I haven't heard of really any of those.
The Handmaid's Tale's huge.
I think
that's on Hulu. That's interesting because that's a Hulu thing. So that's fascinating. I know that they just came out with a new season. I'm plowing through it right now. It's just crazy, crazy good television. And I guess that locks them up for perhaps being able to distribute all the seasons after a certain, you know, after Hulu gets done with it or something. I don't know. That's really interesting to me though. I think that if you've got good content, you can expect that, you know, people are going to pay for it. So I think that you do need to ratchet up the premium that you're willing to pay for any of those content creators. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a deal. You know, I mean, you've got, you know, people who've been in the business a long time, you know, saying, okay, there's more consolidation that can happen. And it does seem that's one industry where a lot of consolidation does historically happen. But I always get nervous about buying any stock based upon the potential for a deal. You know, it's always best to buy the stock based on how the company is executing today not whether or not someone might come in and bail you out and pay a much higher number for it.
Yeah, I completely agree, unless maybe you like work there and have stock options or something. But yeah, generally as a personal investor, it's not really worth chasing. So yeah, it certainly doesn't change my opinion on Amazon as a whole. I still think that at its root, Amazon is kind of almost a logistics company at this point, as well as a data center company. And I think those are kind of their two specialties. And this is just one of the things that they happen to do on the side because they have more money than they know what to do with. I don't know if you necessarily agree with that, Todd, but.
They certainly have more. They have a lot of money.
Yeah. And $8.6 billion is a drop in the ocean.
For them. And right now, I mean, you've got to be able to create content. I wonder if in addition to their catalog, I wonder if they get any other assets that would help them with production of other stuff. Like, I wonder if they get their own, they're getting a studio or if they're getting any other.
I bet they are. Yeah.
Because that would be valuable as well, because think about how much money that, you know, Netflix and all these companies are just plowing into content creation.
Right. And like the facilities and the equipment itself is very expensive too. Again, not like Amazon can't afford it, but if that's a cost they can kind of eliminate by buying out an entire competitor,
yeah,
they could serve to benefit from that.
Yeah, and think about how, you know, the price that the content creators have been demanding has been going up. So they're locking in the cost.
Yep.
They're saying, okay, 5 years from now, I don't want to renegotiate a contract where I have to pay X number amount to be able to have the same content on my platform. So this way I can get the content and I know what I'm paying for it.
Yeah. So it does, as I mentioned, it does bring up the question of is this going to have a bit of a domino effect with other acquisitions? I heard the name Viacom CBS going around on FinTwit a little bit. I think this one's kind of different though, because they're Viacom and CBS, they're essentially side by side, one and the same, and CBS has its own streaming platform is what I mean to say, with CBS All Access.
Yeah, Paramount.
So I don't think somebody's really gonna buy out their. Oh, is Paramount wrapped up in that too?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, so I don't really think that they're looking to be acquired right now. Also, they're much bigger. I just looked up, their market cap is $27 billion right now. So certainly narrows down who could potentially buy them. It would be like essentially Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Lionsgate got bought years ago. All these, there's a whole bunch of them that have been, you know, gobbled up.
Right. Lucasfilm.
How smart were they to buy, it was Disney to buy Pixar and Star Wars when they did.
Yeah. Yeah. For yeah. sure. Yeah. yeah. So it's not to say that Viacom couldn't get acquired, but it seems pretty unlikely if you just kind of look into it. And I'm sure they're pouring probably over $1 billion into that Paramount streaming platform right now too. So seems unlikely to me. So let's just briefly talk about, before we get into our smattering, I just wanted to bring this up because it's current news. And while it's still current, there were a couple of interesting developments this week with two of, if not the two biggest petroleum companies in the world. So there was a big news from ExxonMobil and there was big news from Shell. Now, Shell is traded on the London Stock Exchange, I believe. So are they an ADR, Todd, or how does that work? Yeah. Okay. So
Real Dutch Shell.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what happened with Shell was in a Dutch court, they ruled that Shell has to cut their overall carbon emissions by 45% by the year 2030. And remember, 2030 is 9 years away. So I was saying to Todd before we recorded, I don't really know what that's going to mean for them. I don't know how legally binding this court ruling is, but if they're taking this as seriously as they probably should be, then that's going to fundamentally change how they conduct their business. I don't exactly know how that's going to come about, if they're going to pivot more into natural gas and into maybe even hydrogen, but they certainly can't keep refining oil in the way they do and magically cut their emissions by 45%, right?
Yeah, and I don't know what the rules are there. Can you buy credits from other people? You could obviously, you know, satisfy some of it that way. You could invest more into wind. You can invest more into solar. You can invest more into hydro.
Carbon recapture too.
Carbon recapture. Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the most logical route for them, because unless they're just going to completely become an alternative energy company, if they want to keep refining petroleum and keep drilling for oil, they're going to have to offset that. And so they'll start developing carbon recapture technology of their own to cancel out what they're doing.
Yeah. And I can't remember what the term is now. It's when they're flaring. I think it's when they're flaring. There's a lot of waste right now in the way that when you're turning on the rigs and, you know, you're producing, getting natural gas out, you're getting oil out and stuff. And maybe there's ways that they can, you know, be a little smarter, more energy efficient that way, reusing maybe some of the water that's getting used in the fracking in a different way, or not wasting methane that they're getting out of the ground at the same time. And I mean, I think that it's gonna be interesting to see. I mean, I just looked really quickly because I was curious. The other end of that, obviously, Joe, is that the more conscious they get, right? I don't know if you would ever see them show up in an ESG fund or not, but
yeah, no.
I mean, you know, there's I think $30 trillion invested in socially conscious companies like that. So if they were ever to get themselves to a point where they were able to, you know, meet some sort of a criteria, opens up some new shareholders perhaps.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. I'm certainly, you know, from a younger generation perspective, it's going to be exciting to see how these companies pivot or are forced to pivot over the next couple of decades. And so the other one that I just want to touch on briefly, because we're getting a little long-winded now, is ExxonMobil. So basically they had their election for board of directors this week, and they have two, I guess you could call them, climate activists. I mean, it's not like they have Greta Thunberg on their board or something, but they are aware and accepting of climate change, and they will be voting in a way to help ExxonMobil do, I won't say better in the world, but I'll say doing less bad in the world. And so it was a combination of, as you can imagine, a lot of pension funds, retirement funds own ExxonMobil. So it's a lot of institutional ownership. And so a lot of these bigger institutions kind of banded together in voting for these people that obviously the company and the leadership and management obviously did not want them there. So there's some friction going on right there, which will be interesting to watch. And again, right along with Shell, they don't have a target that's been given to them, but it's definitely those two board members are definitely going to bring some pressure on the overall company's trajectory.
Yeah, you know, one of the other thoughts that just ran through my mind as you were chatting there, Joe, was, you know, sometimes fresh eyes on a board, you know, the old guard kind of digs in their heels. They don't want new blood on the board. Things are going just fine the way, and you get that fresh blood on and you get some new ideas going. And then who knows, maybe those new ideas turn into actually really, really good decisions and profitable decisions for shareholders. So I don't necessarily bristle at the idea that their board composition is changing. I don't own Exxon per se. I do have, we've talked before about forever stocks and rental stocks. And for me, that's mindset. So forever stock, I certainly won't own forever, right? But I might, I mean, I don't know, but I'm going into it thinking I'm going to hold it for the for a very long term. Energy does not fall into that basket for me. They fall into my rentals basket, which is, okay, this is a pure cyclical.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10% of my portfolio is in energy stocks right now, because I believe that, you know, we're in an inflationary environment because we have so much money sloshing around in the system, and that's going to increase energy demand and commodity prices. And that means more profitability for the producers and for the companies that are helping them produce more, you know, get more oil and natural gas out of the ground. So I think that's just, you know, just to sum up, I don't bristle again about changes in that, but I also don't, these are not the energy stocks for me, or are not long-term hide them away, own them forever kind of stocks.
Yeah. So you want to go into a little spattering of some top stocks for the week?
Yeah, I love doing this because it's always so much fun just to go through the research notes and pull out stocks and charts that really look attractive to me. Because I hope, you know, listeners, drop us a note in the comments or whatever. Let us know if you like the smattering, you like the way we do it, anything else that you'd like to see us change up. But I think it's a really good opportunity for us to share some of the things that I'm seeing in the research that, you know, people might want to pay more attention to. So I want to start by pulling up Mimecast, which is a stock that Joe, you and I were talking about last week, right?
Yes, we were.
Yeah. And what did you end up deciding to do with Mimecast?
I still have it. I saw that it had a 100 score and I was like, well, I can't sell it now. That seems like a poor promotion of our product if I sell it while it's got a high score. So yeah, I like the chart. It's had a bit of a breakout recently. You can see there it traded flat for quite a while, and it's above all of its averages right now. And so I think I'll hold on to it until it breaks down past the, what do we got there? Is that the 50 day, Todd?
The green line rising is the 21 day moving average.
Oh, it is.
Okay. Crossed over the 200, the 50 day is still below the 200, but it's curling up. Mimecast, for listeners who aren't familiar with the story, the cloud security risk management service. So they kind of embargo, probably this is the way I think of them anyways. We've used them in different things that I've been involved with in the past. But kind of like an embargo of email. So, you know, if something looks like spam, they'll embargo it. You have to okay it. So it kind of helps keep you less exposed to phishing attempts, which is a big thing, obviously, with cybersecurity. Revenue is fine. Certainly not blockbuster, 17% year over year in the most recent quarter to $133 million. They do make money, and they've been making money since 2019. They're expected to earn $1.14 this year, $1.22 next year, up 7%. This doesn't blow me away. On those numbers don't blow me away. I typically like to focus on companies with 30% top and bottom line growth. But I love the chart setup. It's high scoring in our research. It looks pretty good. My assumption here, Joe, and we had a down day today. It's got a saucer. You can see that on the chart. It's got, yep, a nice big saucer there. My assumption is that it's gonna make a try for that $60, but it might not get there in a straight line, Joe. It may be one of those things where it pulls back towards that $48 previous peak in April, kind of finds its footing again, rallies again. So you may see that as being one of those stocks that's kind of just kind of moving back up towards those all-time highs. And I like it here. I would be a buyer of it below 50. It looks like we closed at 49.99 today. I'd take a little bit of it, maybe run my stop loss below the 200-day moving average, or if you want to get really tight, run it underneath the 21-day moving average. And then just see where it goes from there. So that's one name that I wanted to start off, kick off with. The next name I'm pulling up here is in that energy space. Matador Resources just added this to the research this week, Joe. And I think it has 105 score. Oil and gas exploration and production in Texas and Louisiana. I want to say the Eagle Ford area, formation of shale. Profitable, pretty profitable. 55 cents in 2020, given how bad 2020 is, that's not bad. Expect to earn 278 in 2021, up 405%. And then in 2022, grow another 22% to $3.39. Top line is down year over year, but you'd still expect that. I have no problem with that. Right now, I'm looking at more of the profitability of it. My assumption is that production will increase and you'll start to see those revenue numbers get more to flat and to growth as the year progresses. So my approach on this one, Joe, would be, okay, if I can get this somewhere on another retest of the 21 day, so maybe down here around 29.50. So that's down 3%, down 3%, down 5% day, something like that. Maybe add that to the portfolio. This one kept getting away from me all week, Joe. I talked about it in our Discord, Endava PLC. It's in our best and worst ADR report. They're a UK-based company providing software engineering, cloud transformation, and test automation. All I know, Joe, is that this is exactly the kind of setup I like, and I missed it.
Yeah, that's a nice chart. I could not tell you what the hell they do because I feel like that's just about every SaaS company ever. So they are a generic SaaS company in my book. Yeah, look at this, that's one heck of a chart, man.
Look at this volume. I mean, if you look at, for listeners who are watching us on the YouTube, the blue days are just up days are just dominant volume.
Yeah,
and the red days are, you know, most of them are below average. It's just a sea of blue since mid-April. And, you know, I tried to grab it. I tried to grab it this week, I guess, on Monday and Tuesday. It was on that breakout day. When they break out and then they pull back. And I got a little cute with my entry. And this is why I always do market. You know, here I am. I tried to put in a limit order and the thing ran away from me. And that was the day that I wanted to buy it, and it would have worked out 95 to 102, even though it's pulled back. My strategy for this one now is if I can get it back in a sub 100 area, again, get a down 3 to 5% day, I'd want to take that one. Next one I want to pull up is Dropbox. We've talked about Dropbox before on the show. Joe, I think this is a long-term hold of yours.
This is a long-term holding of mine.
Yeah, very high scoring in our research, grew 12% year over year in the first quarter. Looks like we've got double digit EPS growth expected both this year and next year. And you can see on MarketSmith, they actually have it enabled so they can see the different chart formations. The ones that I'm big fans of, the saucer, cup and handle, and W formations. And we can see we have a W formation right here. My goal with Dropbox would be either I want to buy it somewhere around this 27 area where it is now, or I want to wait until it breaks out into the pivot above 28.33. And then the day after, if it sinks back down to test that breakout point, that's when I would want to pick it up. Let's take a look at another one. I may be pronouncing this one incorrectly.
iCore definitely sounds right. I hope it's not iChore. That would be terrible.
That would be a terrible name. Or maybe it does the chores for you. But anyways, critical fluid delivery subsystems for the semiconductor business. Obviously, we talked about the chip shortage. A lot of the semiconductors, I don't think, make a lot of sense right now. But there are a few exceptions, and this is one of them. 20% year-over-year revenue growth in the first quarter to $264 million. Expected to earn $4.12 next year, which means we're trading at about less than 15 times forward earnings. And if I look at the five-year P range is 5 to 28. Usually in my head, what I do is I say, okay, if things go well and this has got momentum, will they take it back up to the 28 times? Maybe not. But what I might say is I say, rough back of the napkin math, let's say 20 times. So if I look at 20 times 2022, that's an $80 stock. We're currently at 56. So I'd be looking to take this on any down day. If we get down 3%, I mean, the chart formation is fine. It's in a channel right now, kind of in the middle of the channel. So that's what I'd be looking to do there. Resideo Technologies. It's a Honeywell spinoff, I believe. Critical comfort and security solutions. So again, I think this is just basically kind of controlling the different, your environment in buildings and homes, et cetera.
Thermostats, security systems, stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's residential, so it's not commercial. So you've got a lot of consumer discretionary money kicking around, unemployment's low, wages are climbing. We've got some heat and people may be going out and, you know, using these things that can control their climate a little bit better. You've got 20% revenue growth in the first quarter, 13% earnings growth in 21, 12% earnings growth in 22. And, you know, you're again, basing right out in this channel. Not much volume anywhere to speak of here. So I'd almost want to see this one if it could break above the channel again and then come back in and retest. If it did that, then I would be interested in it. Two more, Joe. Tenneco, T-E-N, which we talked about in the Discord channel.
We did.
This could very well be the cheapest stock that I currently own in the portfolio based on 2022 numbers. Expected to earn $4.78. And the stock is trading at $15.68. So it's trading at like 3-point-something times next year's earnings. And they own a whole bunch of different automotive OEM, like parts brands and stuff like that. Like I think they own Monroe Shocks and stuff. If people are driving the used cars again, because we're now going out to work and we're going on vacation or traveling.
And new cars are insanely expensive now.
Yeah. So you might get some more repair orders from that side. And then on the OEM side, if you can boost production back up, if you get over this chip shortage and production boosts back up, maybe that could be a tailwind for it as well. And honestly, again, a stock that I already own, but if I didn't own it already, I'd just be looking for a down day, you know, something like a 5 to 10% move lower where I could take it. I just pulled up the weekly chart just to see how much running room potentially this has. And you can see here, it's kind of into the resistance from December of 2019. But if it can clear here, you know, this was a $30 stock exiting 2018. So take that for what you will. We already talked about NVIDIA, so I won't mention NVIDIA or pull up the chart again on that. And then the last one, I also own this one, Lovesac. Lovesac does the, you know, furniture, comfortable beanbags, comfortable furniture, couches, that type of thing. And, you know, they did a really good job growing throughout the pandemic through shipments in e-commerce, but they also have a big mall-based presence. And my feeling here is that as people go back out and they're shopping and they're going into stores, that's more opportunities for Lovesac to be able to convert them into paying customers. I think this chart right here with the breakout to $83, broke out above the 81 prior high in April. This has been a really good stock to buy somewhere on the 21-day to 50-day moving average. So
yeah, I was just going to say that down 3.5% move today looks like a nice little buying opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think anywhere between 79 and 83 is not a bad entry to give this stock a whirl. And I guess that's the last one for this week and in the smattering stocks to consider buying.
Great. Well, that's a good place to leave off for the weekend. So yeah, I guess with that, everybody have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and we'll talk to you soon.